Welcome to Hawk Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction and haunted entertainment industry. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you, and we hope your season was bright.
Yes.
We should be coming down from the high of the haunt season, crashing. I know around here, our life is filled with buckets and bins and Sharpie markers and organizational methods and arguments about what goes in what bucket. And
the post-Halloween depression.
Yes.
Yes.
What it was, it's PhD, anyway, it's post-Halloween depression, this is our PhDD, post-Halloween depression disorder, is rampant in our industry. PhDD.
Yes.
Is rampant in our industry right around now. And we are not immune to it. I will not even attempt to pretend that I am.
No, I will say that going to another new attraction after haunt season was over was very nice, though, for helping with that.
Yes, we may be talking about exactly that. We will definitely be talking about that attraction.
Yes, it's already in the notes.
It's already in the goddamn notes.
I know what's coming up. They don't.
Yes, they do. But we will be talking about that attraction momentarily. But yes, it did help a great deal. And I've got to say this, you're having a project, because we are finally getting our ass together on getting organized postseason.
Right.
We have historically been some of the worst about season's over, throw everything into some kind of corner and just deal with it next year. We're among the worst. We're not doing that this year. We've got bins. We've got markers. We have a proper organizational method this year.
Yes.
And I'm like, who are these people?
And we put in extra storage space. So
yes, we did.
That helps a lot. Too.
Yes, we are actually doing quite well this year. As a smaller haunt, we have very, very limited storage. So the admittedly modest expansion in our storage space is still a huge asset.
Yep.
But anyways, we are this week coming back and talking about interactive haunts, which I'm excited to discuss.
Yeah, as we actually were able to go through a few this year.
Yeah, and this is a trend that I know has been elsewhere in the country before now, but has really reached our region, so we've been finally able to really experience it firsthand.
Yeah.
And I know this is kind of coattailing on the artisanal haunt discussion we had previously.
It is.
There's a lot of overlap here, I admit.
There is.
But there are some key differences, too, especially after the haunt we went to recently, which was put on by mainstream major haunters,
right,
but was a very interactive and interactivity-oriented haunt.
Yes.
So that's why we're bringing this up as a separate episode. But first, as always, or as usual at least, we have conference reminders.
Yay!
Yay! Whoops!
All right,
do you want to kickstart this week?
Sure. If you want to see more haunters in your life, November 11th through 12th is Legendary Haunt Tour. It's at the Falmont, Pittsburgh. It's put on by the Transworld people. They will be visiting Scare House and 100 Acres Manor. Legendary Haunt Tour with 2Ts.com
is the site. Definitely check them out. And that is in like 4 days from when we're posting this. So
yeah,
if you haven't bought your tickets and haven't made your arrangements, what is wrong with you?
Maybe they're local. Maybe they don't have arrangements to make.
Maybe not. Like, we haven't made arrangements because we're not going because we're not local.
Yes.
But anyways. But we are local to this next podcast. This next event. Sorry, got podcast on the brain.
Yeah.
It is the Halloween and Party Expo. It's January 14th through the 17th, right here in New Orleans, Louisiana, the Convention Center. And the Convention Center, I must say, is quite nice. You will rather love it. There will be some 350 vendors present. It does require business verification.
Yeah.
So you will have to apply for attendance, and you can do so at HalloweenPartyExpo.com. And by the by, if you are coming to this conference, please, 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 pretty please, with a cherry on top, let us know.
We'd love to meet some of you.
We'd love to maybe arrange like a get together, go meet for a few drinks, go hang out, do something as haunters. Let us know. We are on Twitter at Haunt Weekly. We are on Facebook at Haunt Weekly. And we'll be very soon posting our new website with email addresses and calendars and all that good stuff. So check us out there when that comes up. That'll be hauntweekly.com. But yes, let us know if you are coming to that. We would love to have some kind of little mini Haunt Weekly get-together if it can work out.
Yes. Right. And then January 17th through 20th, there's Corn Party. Jonathan's regular joke applies. multiple locations in Hawaii. It's for operators of corn mazes, and it's themaze.com, and that's M-A-I-Z-E.
Yes.
Like
and
corn.
I've got to say, I was just on their website a few minutes ago, make sure there's no new updates, and I saw the picture of the hotel.
Yeah.
Or one of the hotels, at least. Stupid jealous is the word that comes to mind.
Yeah, I would love to be there in January.
Yeah, seriously. Island hopping around Hawaii. I'm about to build me a corn maze. I'm not actually kidding.
Like, my parents have about half an acre, and I know it grows corn. So,
you know? We can make some work. But yes. Also in January, the 26th or the 30th, it's HauntCon, one of the big daddies. It's Nashville, Tennessee at the Sheraton Nashville Airport. There will be tours of Haunted Hell Nashville on Thursday, Nashville Nightmares on Saturday, and Slaughterhouse on Sunday. Learn more at HauntCon.com.
Yes, and then March 23rd through the 26th, it'll be Transworld's Halloween and Attraction Show. It's at the America Center in St. Louis, Missouri. Early bird discounts of $50 off are through March. And that's HAASHOW.com for more info.
Ha show, as we always
ha.
Do. Ha show. It sounds like it's a Boston car show when you say it like that.
Gosh.
It's the joke show around here. And wrapping up our conference reminders this week, it's the Midwest Haunters Convention, June 8th through 11th, 2017. It'll be in Columbus, Ohio at the Greater Columbus Center, and we can announce the first of the haunt tours, though it should not come as a surprise to anyone who's familiar with the conference, or familiar with this podcast for that matter.
Right.
It is the Scaratorium.
Yay!
They'll be touring that on Friday. Other haunt tours, TBA. Learn more at MidwestHauntersConvention.com. Three words all spelled out correctly and appropriately because English matters.
Yes.
So, this brings us to what I think has been one of the greater trends of our haunt season as far as going to haunts.
Yeah.
Interactivity, increased interaction in a lot of the haunts we went to. And I know like a couple weeks ago we did the artisanal haunts bit, which actually covered three of the four really interactive haunts we did.
Right.
And so we're going to like touch super briefly on them here. But this really is a trend that seems to be growing industry-wide.
Right, and I think it's kind of finding the middle ground between traditional haunts and the extreme haunts, too.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Because these are not extreme haunts in any regard.
This is not McCamey Manor. This is not the Blackout. This is not those things.
But it's something more interactive than what you normally get.
Yes.
And, but not traumatizing.
Yes. that's actually a pretty good way to put it. Because when we look at like the current / mainstream haunt experience.
Right.
You know, for me, what I think of most is like we're traveling quickly from room to room.
Right.
And we are, as we are doing this, activating both actor-driven and automated scares.
Correct.
So whether it's an animatronic or an actor behind a drop panel or an actor like actually in the scene, you, by progressing from room to room, are activating these scares.
Right. You are controlling the speed of the haunt in a way.
Yes. You actually have a great deal of control.
Yeah.
And this one thing is like when we do like the garbage horror reviews, we talk about our time through a haunt.
Right.
And I always acknowledge that's fairly meaningless.
Yeah.
Because, we're slow asses.
Well, yeah, we've been asked to hurry along a couple of times.
We want to oogle and ogle everything and every haunt we ever go to. We're those guys. And I know we drive haunters crazy. I drive myself crazy as a haunter.
You just are crazy. There's a difference.
Yes, there is. But But that's one of the things, you have a great deal of control over the time.
Right.
And that also adds a layer of complexity in designing the haunt, because then you can crash into the group in front of you, a group can crash into you.
Right.
Conga lines can form.
Right. You could have people who just want to run through the whole thing and be out as fast as possible.
Which happened a great deal to us this year.
Yeah, and
then which is bad, because we don't have a very long walkthrough anyway.
No, but they don't know that.
Indeed. But yeah. Now, to be clear, there is some interactivity in the traditional haunt experience.
Yes.
Actors will give dialogue, they will offer comment, but generally speaking, it is discouraged for the customer to talk back or interact back.
Right. It's discouraged, and it's... like I said, the customer's in control of how long they spend in a scene.
Within reason, yes.
Yeah.
And like I said, that interaction is really limited because there's such a heavy emphasis on moving forward.
Right. Trying to crank those numbers of people through, as many as you can get.
How many times, I mean, we've done it too. How many times is it preached, scare forward, scare forward?
Right.
Keep that line moving. Don't let them hang out in your room. Keep them moving.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I've noticed this year, is because we moved our big disappearing wall that we have. We've talked about it before on here and other podcasts. We moved it from a scare backwards, because it was at the end of hallway, to a scare forward position. And it's not as effective, I have to say.
Yeah, and that there are some lessons there for us. Yeah. And one of the things I think from that particular scare is last year... we also had a projection on it,
yeah,
which really drew the eye to it and made it really obvious. And then when that wall is gone, it was immediately obvious.
Yeah.
And we moved it to a position because we wanted to shift it, like you said, to a scare forward. And when we did that, we made it so that people oftentimes were not aware that it even happened.
Right.
And watching the security camera footage and sort of doing the Monday morning quarterbacking on that.
Yeah.
I realized there was a slight error there.
Yeah, but next year it'll be a scared sideways.
Or something else.
It'll be from the side.
Yeah, but the bottom line is, in most haunted attractions, there's this huge emphasis on moving the line, keeping people going through.
Right.
Because I know I harp on throughput all the time, and I'm about to give another lecture on throughput later this episode.
Yeah.
So, if you're used to those lectures, and if you listen to a lot of Haunt Weekly, there will be a portion in the future you can skip.
Right.
But the point remains, these are important elements, and these are things that are emphasized very heavily in the industry, for good reason, I would say.
Yeah, because the more customers you can put through, the more money you can make.
Well, I mean, basically, the haunt business, just looking at the business side of it, is two things. Mm-hmm. It's maximizing your capacity, and then filling it.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
So throughput is literally half the business.
It is, yes.
It is literally exactly half the business. So, yeah, it's one of those things where we do focus on that. And in doing so, sometimes we do miss opportunities to create new experiences.
Right.
And that is something I think these interactive haunts are really starting to explore.
Yeah, I can say that.
And one of the things about it is that haunting wasn't always this way.
No, it wasn't.
We're not like old timers, but we're old enough timers to remember a different era.
Right. In fact, the first one that we worked in, the first role in the first night that I had was a guide.
Yes.
Because we were in
cutest
the
guide ever, I would like to add.
I think scariest, maybe. judging from some of the customers' reactions.
I don't want to follow her.
Well, pretty much. And then the next night I was put in a scare roll. So, you know, but...
You were scaring the customers too much as a guide.
Yes, I was scaring the customers too much as a guide.
Yeah.
Just by looking at them.
And being...
Anyway.
Anyways.
So, but yes. So in that haunt, the guides controlled when you entered and left scenes. And that seems to be what this is coming back to.
Yeah. Yeah, because like I said, when you go back to those JC and Boy Scout haunts,
right?
It's like you said, the guide would control. You'd be led into a room. The guide would then stand by the exit door.
Yep.
Usually arms folded and ominous.
Ominous.
And then the scene or whatever was taking place would play out. And then when it was done, the guide would step aside or lead the group into the next room.
Right.
And while that was definitely, like, the way haunting was done for a time, it got abandoned because people realized, hey, if you ditch the guides and ditch the scene-based idea, you stop stopping people,
yeah,
you get a lot more people through a haunt.
Yeah, and which is completely true. You do.
You sell a lot more tickets. You make more money, you know?
Yeah.
Woohoo! But yeah. But the problem was that you don't get that experience of stopping and enjoying, you know, what's going on around you. You don't really get enveloped by it.
Well, and it's also, you know, these haunts do seem to feel more immersive.
Mm-hmm.
And they are taking away the control that you have to run.
Yeah.
To flee. Yes. Which in itself is scary.
Yes. If you are claustrophobic, let's say, a haunt is typically not that terrible of a place.
Right.
Because you always have the next room forward. You always have that next step. You just
right.
keep
and if
moving.
It's designed well, you always know where you're supposed
exactly.
to go.
Exactly. You're never want for a direction.
Mm-hmm.
In one of these interactive haunts, you are. However, these interactive haunts have done away with guides.
Right.
Which is what I find very, very interesting. In all of the interactive haunts we went to, 0 of 4 had guides.
Yeah. Yeah, there were no guides. It was all actors acting out the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually they let you go.
Yeah, the actors were the ones controlling the space.
Right.
But yeah, but it's very interesting to compare that to that J.C. Haunt era. Mm-hmm. Because you realize that, yes, the guide and the mechanic of the scene felt very inorganic.
Oh, yeah, it did.
I mean, I'm thinking back to, like, the cannibal room we had
yeah.
in that haunt. Remember that room?
Yeah.
Everybody in the haunt. I'm pretty sure if I found, like, other actors from that haunt,
yeah.
they would remember that room.
Well, yeah, they would.
And but, yeah, basically, long story short, was it was a room you were led in by the guide, and they did, like, this Last Supper-style thing with a cannibal buffet, and it was the entire cliche of the head poking through the table, what's for dinner? I think
yeah.
it was a playoff of that. But I remember the first time I went through it, thinking, wow, this is silly and this is cheesy, can I go to the next room?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because that room just was a swing and a miss for me, which is one of the reasons why I remember it so much.
Yeah.
It didn't connect with me, other than the fact that the actual lead cannibal was an absolute nutter. I mean...
Yeah, he was pretty crazy. I'm pretty sure he had papers.
Yeah, pretty genuinely crazy, but still.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking at that time, I would like to move. This feels very artificial that I'm being held here.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that was something that was a problem of the guide system. Because I would like to leave the room, but there's this woman, there's this man at blocking the door.
Right.
And we got this a little bit also at one of the charity haunts we went to this year.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that because... at that haunt, their guide walked you through very slowly.
Yeah.
And...
like, I'm slow, we're slow, but this
yeah.
was slow.
Yes. And I think maybe they wanted us to see everything, but we saw everything, and then the actors were kind of standing around trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
And we were trying to figure out what we were supposed to do.
Yeah, it's a problem when the big scare's triggered.
Yeah.
And there's no forward movement. There's nothing going.
Right.
So, yeah, that's a problem. But, yeah. So, but that is, like, the origin of haunting. That idea of being led into a scene and then being held up.
Yeah.
And that's not something that's really been around much for the past 20-odd years. 25, 30 years, maybe.
At least not in the ones that we've been to.
Yeah. I mean,
because it's more about the flow and getting as many people through
exactly.
as possible.
Like I said, once we figured out that, hey, you get rid of the guides, you get rid of scenes, you improve capacity.
Yeah, that there's another way to, well, there's a way to do a free roam haunt that, well, seemingly free roam. It's not actually free roam, but seemingly free roam
yeah.
haunt that people can go through on their own without getting lost. And without having to be stopped.
the labyrinth versus maze problem, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
A haunt is a labyrinth. It's not a maze. A maze has dead ends. There are mazes within haunts, but we're not having that conversation again. We did that episode previously.
Yeah, I would love to go to a sandbox-style haunt. For any gamers out there.
Yeah.
That's where you can just go into absolutely every place
that
you can find. I would love to get lost in a haunt like that.
It would be very interesting, but I don't know if that's A, practical.
Well, no. It's not practical.
Well, you want practicality. Wrong podcast for practicality.
Exactly.
But yeah, this is like a... But this idea of holding people up and slowing them down deliberately, not thinking so much about throughput,
right,
is coming back.
And I have to wonder if the tradition kind of evolved from going to plays and theater. Because that is what you would do there, is you would go and you would sit and you'd watch the play act out. And so maybe whenever it, you know, first started, if anybody has any history on this, because we're just talking out of our heads now.
Yes. that's what we usually talk out of, I would hope.
Well, hopefully.
But as we said, we've had a bunch of experiences this season with more interactive haunts.
Yes.
With haunts really exploring this idea of temporary captivity and greater interaction with the actors.
Right.
Now, we covered three of them in the artisanal haunt one.
Yes.
And so we won't recap it completely and totally, but they are worth at least mentioning here.
Right.
The Fly Circus Space one, which was more of an acrobatic... More of an
exhibition of talents.
Yeah. It was actually a very original way to do it.
Yep.
But it had the same thing. You had a guide. And this one actually did have a guide.
Yeah.
And you would be stopped room to room, and you would observe a performance or something going on, and then advance to the next quote-unquote room.
Right.
It's kind of hard to call them rooms, and they're separated by mats. But, you know, the point remains... That one actually did have a guide, and I'm realizing when I said 0 out of 4, it's 1 out of 4 had guides.
Yeah.
Because I forgot he was there because he was so in the background.
Well, yeah, he was in the background except for at the very beginning when he was juggling scimitars.
So, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I forgot the dude juggling scimitars, all right? Judge me. Well, what an industry we are in.
And whenever he, was dragged off by the girl.
Yeah. I love that. I literally forget the guy that was juggling scimitars. You're absolutely right.
Yes.
So yes, 1 out of 4. I apologize, Fly Circus Space. You did have a guide. He was juggling scimitars. He was interesting and awesome. I just totally forgot about him because he wasn't on a silk or doing human contortionist stuff.
Right.
That's very sad, actually. I feel very bad for this guy, you know. He was very good. I totally forgot about him.
Okay, so that's that one.
But Poplarville is where the interactivity thing really begins to me.
Right, because even their rules, it was like watching a mini play. You sat down and you watched a mini play to go over all the rules.
Yeah, and that was actually... I will say this... I have been to many, many haunts.
Yeah.
I've listened to, read, observed, and participated in many rules demonstrations.
Right.
That was by far the most interesting.
Yes, that was my favorite. Before this, my favorite was at Rise, where they locked you into the little room. But
then they just played a video, and...
Yeah.
It wasn't that great.
It's just that I liked the bookcase opening.
Yeah, that was cool. But with Poplarville, like I said, they actually sat you down.
Right.
And they acted out a scene between a son and a mother, I believe it was. And it was, like, really a tense scene.
Yeah.
It was like, I was waiting for this to take a domestic violence turn tense.
Well, she was playing an alcoholic mother and he was playing a pompous son who was trying to be something he wasn't. She was calling him out on it.
Yeah.
It was fun.
And it was very fun. It was very, very legitimately tense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I'm sitting there going, how hardcore is this haunt really?
Yeah.
What did we get into here?
I was waiting for the buzzer seats or something.
Yeah.
Because that would have been fun.
But yeah, but Poplarville did this thing where every time you would free roam into a room.
Right.
And it basically was just room, 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 room. No break between them.
Right.
But you would go into a room, the exit would be blocked.
Yeah.
A scene would unfold. The actors would control that scene.
Yes.
And then when they were done executing the scene, the door would open.
Right.
Or not open, as is one case in that haunt.
Yeah.
But it was a very, very interesting way to do it. And it really did. The actors really encouraged you to participate.
Yes, they did.
And like a good example was in the very first quote-unquote real room with the little girls.
Right.
They forced you to sing.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of them wanting us to sing in that haunt.
Yeah, and if anyone's ever heard my voice, my singing voice, you know that's not a good idea.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they, you know, kept trying to get you to sing after that.
I did my best. This is my best as shite.
You did your best, yeah.
I'm terrible. I'm banned from karaoke. I'm objectively horrible at singing. But the point is, they had that control, and they used that in order to both hold you back and extend the run of the haunt.
Right.
But also to give you new feelings, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
A new experience, because like you said, you can't just run.
Yeah.
There's no, I can just leave this scene. It's making me uncomfortable. No, you've got to sit and wallow in the filth you just wandered into.
Yeah.
Like the pig in slop, you must hang out there for a bit.
Yes, well, it's like, you know, if kids tell you to do something, you're probably going to do it.
Yeah. Well, and like the first experience we had with that was 13th Gate.
Yeah.
Where we were roaming through the haunt, and we're just, you and I are just talking and doing like what we do, and we're in a section with not any scares or anything.
Right.
Little girl walks up to us and goes, shh.
Yeah.
And I realized we both just shut up.
Yeah.
Like, the conversation was dead.
Yeah.
And I realized as we left, wow, we will do anything a little girl tells us to do.
Yeah, little kids.
Little kids, man, that's the power.
Yeah.
But
yeah, well, and we found out later she wasn't actually a little kid, but, you know.
The point remains.
Yeah. Plays one.
Plays one on TV or in the haunt.
Yeah.
But yeah, they use that space to control both the flow of the haunt and to make you have experiences that you would not get.
Right.
It was sometimes uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I would say, but uncomfortable in the way that they want.
Yeah.
And the problem with it, with Poplarville, was the rooms that worked really well.
Yes.
The rooms that didn't work, it's like, okay, can we leave now?
Yeah.
And that's one of the challenges you have with this style of haunting.
Right.
And that brings us to Beyond the Haunted Puddle.
Oh, my God.
Which is, this is the quintessential big swing haunt.
Yeah.
This was a haunt done by an art space. I think we mentioned it previously.
Yeah.
But every sequence in it was a big swing. They're doing big, grand artistic strokes.
Yeah. And it was very avant-garde and weird. And I have trouble calling it a haunt.
Well, but it did have some interesting examples of interactivity.
It did.
And the DMV room is probably one of the most interesting.
Right. Because you had to sit and like you were at the DMV.
Yes.
And there was a guy there who worked for the haunt. There were two people there, actually.
Yeah, one behind the desk and one another fellow waiter, I guess. Person waiting.
Yeah, a person waiting.
Not a really a
DMV
waiter.
Customer.
DMV patron.
Yeah. That was basically interacting with you the whole time.
Yes.
Telling you to be quiet so that he could fill out his forms.
Yeah, and he never really actually put much effort into filling out his forms. But it was actually very interesting because you and I kind of took the, okay, we'll just do what this guy says.
Yeah.
And see what happens.
Yeah.
So you and I were quiet. Our friend Kyle went the other way and intentionally messed with him.
Right. Yeah. Well, I typically am a quiet person anyway.
Yeah. And I'm typically the guy that tries to do the exact opposite of what you think I'm going to do. So I know by nature of this guy going shh and trying to shush us and yell at us for being noisy, he's probably expecting us to try to get hostile and try to, you know what I mean?
Right.
To try to aggravate him. So I'm just thinking, no, I'm just going to play his game. I'm gonna sit and be quiet. I'm going to read this California license application form, which I don't know where they got a giant stack of those. I'm seriously curious about that.
Right.
But yeah, so but you're trapped in this room with this guy for a pretty extended period of time.
Yeah, it felt like at least 2 to 3 minutes.
It was. I think it was a little bit longer than that. I think it was pushing 5.
Okay.
And we were further trapped by the fact that they could only let one group out at a time. By one group, I mean 2 people in this case, 2 to 3 people.
Right.
And so we were actually 2 groups in. We went in as 1 group of 5,
right.
But our group was broken up.
Yeah.
So we 3 were the last to leave, me, you, and
correct.
Kyle.
Yep.
So we actually had double the weight, effectively.
We did. Yeah, that's true. Which, you know, did hurt their throughput, going back to that little thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was interesting experience.
It was a very interesting experience. I don't know how useful it is in this conversation about interactive haunt.
No.
Because it was such a bizarre kind of interactivity. But,
right.
But those were the 3 artisanal haunts we went to. And actually, go back to the podcast about artisanal haunts for more on that.
Yes.
But after Halloween, we got our chance finally to go to the Asylum, a secondary attraction at Rise here locally.
Right.
And this is an interactive haunt, a very, very interactive haunt, put on by a mainstream haunted attraction.
Yes.
I think those are all fair words.
Yes, those are all fair words.
And it was very, very interesting.
I loved it. I did.
I wish this were a video podcast so people could see your face beaming right now.
I can't wait to do the review on it. Because we haven't done that yet. So we were busy picking up stuff. But yeah, I mean, it was different. I liked that Rise has their traditional haunt and one that's interactive and touch.
Yes.
Because there was soft touch, as they called it. Which was
It's an apt description.
It is. It was very character driven.
Yes.
And the acting was great.
And one thing that they did, I think that was very, very smart in this haunt, was it wasn't just, like with Poplarville, it was room, 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 exit.
Right.
With this one, it was room, get released, meander a bit, then you enter a scene.
Right.
Meander a bit, then enter a scene.
Yeah.
And I think you had like 5 or 6 scenes. It was somewhere, I didn't actually check.
Yeah.
But it felt like 5 or 6 scenes. But you had a free roam period in between the two that kind of lulled you into that comfort of a normal haunted attraction.
Right.
But then you get stopped and realize, oh, the exit door is shut.
Yeah.
Something's going to happen here.
Right.
And I tell people all the time that to me, a haunted attraction is like my living room.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's your haunt, Tim's haunt, or whoever's haunt it is. A haunted attraction is like my living room. I feel safe there.
Right.
I know the rules. I know how it works.
Yeah.
I'm at home.
Yeah.
This is my place. These are my peoples.
It's one of the few places we feel at home. Yeah.
So it was very interesting because I realized when I got locked in some of these scenes, even though I never felt unsafe, I felt ill at ease.
Right.
Which is not a feeling I experience a lot in haunts.
Well, yeah. And I felt ill at ease from the beginning, honestly, because they split up the group.
Yes.
Which has
super briefly, admittedly, but
yeah, it was brief, but there's that whole period of wondering, are we going to get completely separate experiences?
Yeah. And it was interesting because you and I got split. We were among the split.
Right.
You were infected. I was not.
Yes.
Basically. Ha ha, Crystal was infected.
Yeah, I was.
But yeah, it was a weird moment there. I'm sitting there thinking, well, at least we are in separate groups so we can like communicate on the experience. Now,
right.
That really wasn't necessary because the way it worked out.
Right.
But it was something interesting that they did, and it did produce, like you said, a little bit of an extra ill at ease.
Right. Yeah.
And, like I said, the acting in this haunt was incredible.
Yeah, it was. It was over the top. It was awesome.
Especially considering we went there late at night. We were there past 11 p.m.
Yeah.
On a night post-Halloween.
Yeah.
It's like, if ever there were a time where I would forgive actors for being tired or sluggish or not on their A game,
right.
This would be it.
Yeah.
But they were.
Yeah.
So, actors, bad news in our reviews.
Yeah.
No more excuses.
Oh, well, yeah. Well,
maybe we'll give excuses. We'll give excuses.
But. Well, you know, there's always going to be opening night, you know, stuff. And we do go to a lot of haunts opening night.
Yes, we do.
Because,
that's,
you know,
it's a requirement, and we have no other option. But no, it was a very, very interesting experience, and it was something that I think was unlike anything else we had this year.
Yeah.
Because we'd had the Poplarville experience, and it's like the closest thing I can connect it to is Poplarville.
Right.
And I know those two are not super close.
No.
Because Poplarville is the interpretation of a theater group on an interactive haunt.
Right.
Where the Asylum was a mainstream haunts interpretation.
Right.
So yeah, two very, very different experiences, but still as similar as I can get.
Right. And going into the Asylum, they did tell you repeatedly, interact with people.
Yeah.
You know, try to throw our actors off. We want you to talk to them. But I think that I was so enchanted with the new experience.
Yeah.
That I didn't interact as much as I normally would.
Yes, and part of the problem, I think, for me at least, was we go to so many haunts.
Yeah.
We do this so much that it's very hard to break the habits.
Yeah.
Of not interacting, of just exploring and looking and seeing and observing.
Right.
It's very hard to break. And now, I did manage to break out of the shell a little bit and play.
Yeah.
I told a couple of the actors, don't threaten me with a good time.
Yeah.
And I gotta say this, I learned something very, very horrible about myself in this haunt. That apparently I will take anything that is handed to me.
Yeah.
That would be terrible. Because there's a sequence where they give you medication, quote unquote,
right,
in the Asylum. And they give it in little paper cups like you would like an actual mental hospital. And so I get it and I immediately knock it back without even thinking.
Yeah.
And I exit the haunt and we're talking to the owner.
Yeah.
And I'm like, by the way, what was in that? Am I about to die or something?
Yeah.
I should probably know. I was like, oh, it was a mint. It was a Tic Tac or something.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, God.
Yeah. Yeah, because, well, and see, the nurse was saying take it, and the patients were all saying don't take it, so I didn't take it. Because I'm like, well, if it's making them act like that.
Yes, they were all acting that way because of Tic Tacs. We now know the answer. The mystery's been solved.
Yeah.
But it was a very, very unique experience.
It was.
You know. And well, I'm sure we'll be talking more about it in future episodes.
Right.
So real fast, let's talk about some of the advantages of these types of haunts.
Okay.
It is a new experience.
It is.
It's breathtakingly new.
Yeah.
And that's just it. I walked away from the Asylum and from Poplarville, too, thinking, wow, this was something I've not felt before.
Right.
This was a sense of unease. This was a sense of, you know, I guess you would say immersion.
Yes.
That I had not felt in a haunted attraction in some time.
Yeah, I was able to lose myself in the setting.
Yes.
Which, usually I'm very aware that I'm in a haunted house and...
Yeah, and I'm safe and all that blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And part of that is the removal of the way forward.
Right.
We are so used to having that in a haunt that when you take it away, it's like... Wait a minute.
Yeah. Something's different here.
Something's odd. I don't know how to respond to this.
Yeah.
But yes, it's a very new experience. And many of these haunts, by the way, did include contact. In fact, I think all the ones we went to included some degree of contact.
Right.
Even if it was very light contact, as it was at like the Fly Circus space.
Yeah.
Where they would mess with you a little bit. But the point of the matter is, it does include some contact, usually, because that adds a layer to the interactivity.
Right.
And it also provides an opportunity to include scares you don't see at regular haunts. Like we mentioned, you can close exits off. You can prevent people from leaving scenes. You eliminate that running.
Right.
You increase claustrophobia.
Yeah.
And you can do scares and things that are drawn out. You're not limited to just simple jump scares.
Right. And there's a fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
And just having that control taken away.
Yeah.
You know, it messes with people.
And all in all, it's a unique selling point, I think.
Yeah.
It's a very, very unique selling point. It's something that you can put on your promotional material that other haunts cannot say.
Right.
It also does let you do a lot more with less space.
Yes.
None of the interactive haunts we went to were big.
No.
Fly Circus space was probably 500 square feet.
Maybe, yeah.
If that. That's being generous. The one in Poplarville was less than 1,000, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And even the Asylum was probably less than like 3,000 to 4,000 square feet.
Yeah, it felt like maybe a third or no, less than a third maybe of the main haunt.
Well, I'd say about a quarter of the main haunt. I mean, and think about it like this way. Poplarville was a solid 15-minute walkthrough for us.
Right.
They did it with less than 1,500 square feet, definitely.
Yeah.
Probably less than 1,000. I don't know their actual square footage. I didn't ask them.
Right.
But it was definitely less than 1,500 square feet.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
It is.
If you have a small haunt and wanted to make it feel big,
yeah,
this is a potential approach to take.
It is.
It's something to really, really think about here. It also allows you to do more with fewer actors.
Yeah.
Because you only need a couple of actors per scene.
Right.
And in some cases, depending on how you pace it, how you time it, one actor might be able to work two or three scenes even.
Right. And I did note that in a couple of places in the Asylum.
Yeah.
Where one actor was able to, like, reach through walls and stuff. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting.
Yes, it is. And since a scene can last several minutes, though, you can actually do a 15-minute walkthrough with about a dozen actors and have the customers constantly interacting with people.
Right. Constantly interacting. It feels full.
The Asylum probably, I mean, I do not know this. The Asylum probably only had about a dozen to 16 actors. And Crystal's thinking about that.
Yeah.
It was not a large number of actors, though.
It was less than 30.
Okay, less than 30. But Poplarville definitely only had 12 to 16.
Yeah.
And it was also a 15-minute walkthrough.
Right.
So you have that ability to do a lot more with fewer actors as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so once again, tiny space, tiny crew. You want to do something bigger. You want to give people more time in your haunt. You don't want this to be a 3-minute walkthrough.
Right.
This could be a potential solution for it.
Yeah, it could be.
So that, I think, is one of the biggest advantages, is that it allows smaller haunts to punch above their weight a little bit here.
Right. And I mean, I know that we are not an interactive home haunt at all, at least not this year, but we do build scares that one actor can activate multiple.
Yes.
Because we started out with very few people.
Yes.
Working in it, like a lot of haunts do. And now we've gotten so many actors, but we still build like half of them aren't going to show up.
Yeah.
You know?
We trust our actors to be there.
Yeah.
But plan in case.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
trust but verify.
Well, yeah, because, you know, we have had actors who were with us for several years and then just Halloween night decided not to come.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that was frustrating. Sorry.
Yeah, that's all
tangent.
Right. Tangent. But yeah, there are some disadvantages, too, that are worth discussing.
Right.
And the big one, we've hinted at it all night.
Yep.
Limited throughput.
Yep.
Speaking with the owners of these haunts, they get about 1/4 the capacity / throughput of a mainstream haunt.
Right.
And that's because you have to hold people, you have to do this in order to have that engagement, have that interactivity. And so that hurts your throughput.
It does.
And,
there's not a lot of ways to fix that.
No. You can shorten scenes, you can make tweaks to it. But at the end of the day, it's kind of a rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. You're only improving it so much. It's never going to get to the capacity per hour of a mainstream haunt.
Right. Now, I will say that that's the other thing I like about the Asylum, is that a lot of people can go to the other attractions on Rise's property.
Yes.
Because they have a lot of other things you can do.
Yes, including bull riding, electric bull riding.
Yeah.
I don't get that one either.
I don't get it. I'm sorry, guys.
I don't get it either. I don't understand what it has to do with anything else that's there.
Nope.
I would understand it. When I go to a haunt and they have the coffin ride and the buried alive simulator. Yeah. I get that. I may not do it, but I understand why it's there.
Right.
This is the David S. Pumpkins. I don't understand why it's there.
No, it's not even like a zombie bowl. It's just a regular bowl.
Yeah, that's it. Decorate the bowl like a zombie.
We've got bones on it.
Boom, solved. All right, moving on. But yeah, this limited capacity increases your wait time, and it really limits the amount of money you can make per night from the attraction.
Right.
It puts a hard cap on it.
Yeah.
Also, since interactivity and touch haunts do go hand in hand, the touch aspect does really raise your legal risks.
Right. It raises the legal risk. A lot of people will not go through a touch haunt.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we saw several turn away.
Yeah, and it was really interesting because they were other haunters.
Yeah, they were. But
we're not naming names.
No. Well, we didn't talk to them, and we can't confirm that the shirts that they were all wearing were meant that they were from another haunt. But,
I'm pretty sure they were.
Yeah. But yeah, as soon as we were touched within the few seconds
of entering the door, they noped and went right out the entrance.
Yeah, which is fine. One of the other risks is that training your actors to touch on extremities is very important. I had my shoulder grabbed at one point.
Mm-hmm.
They almost got more than a shoulder. I'm just going to leave it
there. They were coming from the top.
Yeah, as a blind reach over the top through a window thing. And yeah, he almost got more than shoulder. But
yeah, and
would have been completely accidental.
Yeah, and then
I would have understood that.
I don't think we would have made a fuss about it, but no. Others might have.
Right. Especially if it's like a young teenage girl or something.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and that's one thing. Like when Kyle did the touch versus no touch haunts episode a while back,
right?
He talked about the need to focus on touching extremities. You go for the wrists. You go for, you know, the hair. You go for the ankles.
Right.
You go for the safe zones.
Right. The top of the head would have been a good one for that.
What? And I think Ellie, the former swimming coach here, would say not the bathing suit zones.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's really, really tough. It does open you up to legal risk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something I'm thinking about. And go back to just the previous episode, 48. We talked about a full contact haunt in Utah.
Right.
That may be getting sued, even though they warned and did all that stuff, signed waivers and all that. Because at the end of the day, people cannot consent to be assaulted.
Correct.
It is a legal oxymoron. You cannot have people waive the right to be assaulted. It's not how this works.
Right. And I will say that was one of the things that I noticed with Poplarville. They did use the term that you will be assaulted if you got the bracelet that you were consenting to be touched. And at the asylum, they used the term soft touch. The asylum was much more touch involved.
Yes.
Than Poplarville.
Your hair got so much interactivity. Oh, my God.
I know. But, yeah, I think that's something that I would warn people against is not using that term of being assaulted whenever you're explaining to customers what they're going to experience.
And
I think the soft touch is really good.
And part of that is assault is a legal term that literally means, you know, in part, touch you do not consent to.
Right.
Assault in the name means you do not consent.
Right.
If I say to you, I'm going to assault you, that means I'm going to contact you or put you in fear of your life in some way that you do not consent to.
You mean you're not going to go to the kitchen and get the salt?
No. All right. We're on the joke show tonight. Okay, and you hinted at another disadvantage, but some customers don't want that interactive experience.
Right.
It might be too hard for them. It might be too extreme, especially the touch element of it. If
right.
there is a touch element, it might be a situation where they're just not comfortable with that.
Yeah.
So you do limit your audience some.
Right. But if you've got other main attractions, that's not as big of a deal
right.
as if you don't.
Right. Okay. Another thing is, it requires better actors.
Yes.
You need... Because think about it for a second here. Every haunt has the drop panel dude.
Yeah.
The guy that's not particularly good at anything but loves haunting, loves scaring people.
Yeah.
So you stick him behind a drop panel and tell him to give him a light and you make it easy for him.
Right.
And that's fine in a haunted attraction, in a regular one. This guy will die on the vine in an interactive one.
Yeah.
He just will.
Yeah. You have to have actors that can sell the scene. You have to make me believe
that
person really is that way.
And here's the thing. I've been in haunting now for over 20 years.
Yeah.
In various capacities, various roles, various functions. Right. Even I am not sure I am able to do that.
Yeah. Well, not with the level of intensity that it requires over a full season.
Yes. I could do it for a night. I could do it for a few hours, definitely.
Right.
I don't know if I could do it full season.
Yeah.
This requires a very, very special breed of actor.
Yeah.
And because
you would consider them character actors versus, you know, extras.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really, really tough role to fill. And I don't know. Finding enough actors to staff this type of haunt. Because you got to remember, your customers are going to be spending several minutes with these guys. It's not going to be someone they see in passing for 10 seconds or 15 seconds going through a haunt. No, they're going to live and breathe with these guys.
Yeah.
They're going to interact with, they're going to have conversations. They're going, you know what I mean? They're
going to
live in this world.
Yeah.
That's a whole other equation.
It is.
So... Yeah, you need to have the best actors possible.
Yep.
And in a similar vein, you need to have immaculate attention to the detail in your design.
Right.
Because here's the thing. You can get away with stuff when you know people are only spending 30 seconds or 45 seconds in a room.
Right.
And they're not going to get a super good look at everything.
Yeah.
You keep me in a room for a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes or more...
Yeah.
I'm going to get a chance to examine every single detail
right.
of that room.
And I was unable to find some of the actor entrances in the asylum, which is very impressive because we are always talking about, hey, I can see your actor run.
Yeah.
Your actor run showing, you know.
Well, I will say, but the criticism I would have is the haunt did not feel old to me. And we've talked about this... back and forth. It's not that they did anything wrong with the build, the lighting, or the design.
No.
I think it was the smell.
Yeah, it smelled very new.
It smelled super sterile, super new, and not like sterile in the way that an asylum should smell.
Yeah, not like cleaning fluids.
It smelled sterile as in it just was blank.
Right.
It was neutral.
Yeah. Yeah, that would probably be the one improvement that would really
help
sell it.
Make that immersiveness, increase that. So, yeah, so basically, you're doing more with less space and fewer actors, but that space and those actors need to be knocked up to 11.
Right.
You have to make sure everything is stupid tight.
Yeah.
And that's in every aspect of your haunt.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can do this, but it's got to be really, really good. Now, that being said, I think that Rise had it right.
Yeah.
Because Rise made it an alternative attraction to a quote-unquote regular haunted house.
Right, mainstream, yeah.
Yeah. You can go to Rise Haunted House, you can tour Rise, and never set foot in the asylum.
Right.
And have a very full haunted attraction experience. Godspeed,
yeah.
Have fun.
Yeah. I will be looking forward to the asylum next year.
Yes. I think I'll be looking forward to the asylum more than Rise.
Yeah.
And honestly, definitely more than Zombie Paintball.
Yeah. Yeah, although it was fun and they have improved it a lot
Yeah, but all that being said, the asylum.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, get to the chase.
Yeah.
I agree with you, though. So, but yeah, it makes sense as an alternative or an add-on.
Right.
But I don't know if necessarily it makes sense as a standalone attraction.
Right. And I will say that I think that... a standard haunt that has a touch option would not be able to be as interactive as this was, because you're still the customer still has control of when they leave.
Yeah, and Poppleville was the same way.
Yeah.
Even though they had the touch versus no touch option,
right?
The fact of the matter was the customer still did not have that control in terms of when they left the scene.
Right.
So the result of that was, even if you didn't get the touch option, you still got a lot of that interactivity.
Right. Exactly.
And I think, honestly, I would like to go back through Poplarville sometime, if ever were possible, without the bracelet to see how it's different. Because here's the thing. I don't think it's very different. They were not super aggressive with the touch.
Yeah.
And the result was still more a matter of you're talking to and communicating with and interacting with these actors in a non-physical way.
Right. Well, and unfortunately, I don't think you're going to get that chance because they are a teardown haunt. And they do a different production each time.
Yeah. But regardless, I think the Asylum has it about right. I really like this idea as an add-on attraction.
Yeah.
They're smaller attractions that are geared toward a more niche audience. An audience that wants that experience, that more interactive, that more visceral experience.
Right.
It may not, you know, just want, because you get the people that just want to go through a haunted house. They want the jump scares. They want the Bugatches. They want the chainsaw guy.
Right.
And that's it.
Yeah.
But the people that want to take it that one little notch further, this is an option.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I think if I were opening a haunt now, I would look at this as an alternative to an escape room.
Yeah.
Because escape rooms are silly expensive. And while escape rooms are year-round and do have a bunch of advantages, they may wind up being a fad.
Yeah.
I'm still a little bit nervous about that.
Yeah, only time's going to tell with that one.
Yeah. I'm not sure, but...
The other thing is that if you build extra attractions on your property, then people are going to want to come to your haunt more and more.
Yeah.
So I think that that's added incentive.
I agree.
To get people there during season. So it actually could wind up being cheaper in the long run. Because even though you're not bringing in revenue year-round, you're also not paying people to work year-round.
Right.
And you're not paying the electricity and all that.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I mean, it's like, think about like the 13th Gate. They have the 13th Gate, and then across the street they have Necropolis 13.
Right.
Which is the New Orleans Cemetery haunt. It's an actor playground style haunt.
Right.
I think Necropolis 13 now, in hindsight, would be a lot stronger if it were a more interactive haunt.
I do too. Yeah, I think that they could take it this direction.
Yes, I agree.
And it would be much better, especially since they are limited in what they can change.
Yeah, and
because of the way it was constructed.
And by the space. They just don't have the room. So, yeah. This is a way to take that excess property, that excess land you have, that maybe not be big enough to do a traditional haunted attraction. You can't do another 6,000 square foot haunted attraction, but you can build a 2,000 square foot interactive attraction. Could be interesting.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I was just laughing at your 6,000 square foot where you...
6,000, 10,000, 15,000, 20,000, you can't
85,000 with the 15,000 walkthrough.
Oh, terror. Sorry. On the coast! Terror on the coast!
That was the terror.
That was the terror.
Anyway.
We'll do that one later. But anyways, yes, I think this is a very interesting idea as an add-on and as a secondary attraction.
Yeah.
And I can see this being a more natural add-on than escape rooms in a lot of cases.
Yeah, because you've already got the built-in audience for the haunt.
Yeah.
And that's who's going to be looking for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, anyways, that's about all I've got on this subject here. Yeah. Something to think about, something to look at. Definitely, definitely, haunters, check out what Rise is doing with the Asylum. I'm really sad they were not able to open until too really late in the season.
Yeah, I would have recommended it to so many people.
Yeah. And it's not anyone's fault that they were impacted by the flooding in southeast Louisiana. Believe me, this is not blame.
No.
But, yeah, I wish we'd been able to go on the night we went so I could have recommended it hither and yon to
and
all of my friends.
And brought everybody and gone multiple times.
Exactly.
Because it was just really interesting.
But they were not able to get it opening until we were already, let's see, about chin deep in our own build and our own stuff. So we could not go until after our season ended. And that's kind of a regret now. But regardless, yeah, check out what Rise is doing. It's very interesting. And look at what some of the artisanal haunts are doing. I think this can be a great add-on for haunted attractions.
Yeah.
Anything else?
There's all the Halloween candy still. Does anybody else have this problem? What do you do with it? Okay, that's it.
Yes, tell us what you do with the Halloween candy. But on that note, everyone, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this was Haunt Weekly, episode 49, discussing interactive haunts. We will see you guys next week. It's in the name. It's Haunt Weekly.
Yes, but so, they don't see us. They just listen.
Shh.
It's garbage horror where they see us.